Previously.tv Podcast Network.
You may make it go away.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode is Season 9, Episode 12, Trials and Tribulations. Speaking of tribulations, here's your host, Star Arianos, everybody.
Hello, Sarah.
I guess we left ourselves open for that one, did we not?
We Dara, did. Hello. let's just get right into it, shall we?
Yes.
All right. Let's start with our C-plot. Donna and Noah sexcapade stuff. So Donna and Noah enter the Walsh house, making out and talking dirty baby talk, and keep getting interrupted by all the other morons who live there. And when we see them next, they're in Noah's car as Donna finishes a call from Felice. Felice and Dr. Martin are about to leave on vacation to Amish country. How does this affect Donna? Clip two.
They just want me to stop by the house, water the plants, pick up the mail, you know, the dutiful daughter stuff.
Dutiful, eh? I just thought it was funny that, like, Vincent Young's crapola pronunciations have now rubbed off on Tori Spelling.
So Noah proposes that they just go and stay at the house while her parents are gone so that they can fuck in there, basically. She refuses, saying they should just try his place again, even though, as we just saw, it's a zoo. He misses the privacy of his stupid boat. Donna remembers that her parents have a pool and then changes her mind, like, because we can fuck in the pool? I don't know. So Donna brings Noah to her parents' fat pad, where he immediately proposes this. Clip three.
You want to play house?
Noah. I want to play doctor. And I know exactly where my dad keeps his stethoscope.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm. There's so much view. There's like sex heeing. Uh-huh. There's the reference to her dad's stethoscope while playing doctor. Let's move on. I really needed everyone else to suffer with me, and now you all have.
Oh, it's about to get worse. It's about to get even worse with the babyishness. So anyway, Donna turns off the phone ringer, arms the alarm, gets down to business, but there's a couple of guys there installing new carpet. It's not a euphemism. And they can't go to the pool either because... Got other guys are out there scotch guarding the rugs. And so after all the workers
have left
that night.
What would that be a euphemism for exactly? Like mechanically? gluing cubes on somebody? Putting a merkin on somebody? Like,
look, we don't know what they're into.
No, we don't. So after all the workers have left that night, Noah wants to go bone in Donna's parents' room, which she does not. But she also doesn't want to do it in her own room either for a very mature reason. Clip four.
Mr. Honeytum's in there.
Mr. Honeytum?
Yeah, my teddy bear. He'd be watching us.
I don't think he'll mind in this case.
Oh, I think he would. I mean, I couldn't.
Gross. Like, at this point, Noah should be like, oh, okay, you're a child. We can't do this. It would be a crime.
Yeah. You're not able to give meaningful consent. It's the idea that an inanimate object cannot be placed outside while you're fizzucking has apparently not occurred to anyone.
But also, Donna being Donna, why would this precious teddy bear still be in her childhood bedroom? Like, why wouldn't she have brought it with her to her current childhood bedroom?
I don't know.
Apparently, she has no memories about the floor of the hallway, so that's safe to fuck in. But then she backs Noah up against the wall into the alarm and has another mature response, which may make it to the permanent soundboard. Dave, clip five.
Mm. Oh, no.
And then there's some like physical business with her French manicured talons that are seriously approaching Streisand and Prince of Tides territory. Yep. Gross.
I have it marked in my notes sort of to make sure that I clipped it or got it for the visual aids as Donna Lucy hand pick. So welcome everyone.
Hang on one sec.
I scored some amazing stones.
Challenge. Five scenarios that would result in this reaction.
Oh, no.
I'll go first.
Okay.
You're about to make an omelet, and you have exactly three eggs, and you drop two of them, and they break.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Mine was also food related, which is you put, you forgot about the toast at the peach pit and set off the sprinklers. Oh, no.
I got another one while you think.
I actually have one.
Okay.
These don't have to be from the show. These are just generally things.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
You're leaving the grocery store, and the bag that they've given you with groceries in is very slowly falling apart.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Oh, God.
You try to pull out of your parking space with the emergency brake still on and accidentally drive about a mile. This happened to a friend of mine.
Oh, no.
Take us home.
The talons that you spent $75 and 2 hours having put on broke when you were trying to turn off the burglar alarm.
Oh.
Oh, no.
Oh, all right. I love that even Vincent Young is like, really?
I know. That feels like a very natural response. Anyway, Dave, if you want to clip that down to just the gasp and oh no, I support you.
I think I already did.
Oh, no.
Oh, you did. Good job. So then a security guard shows up to deal with this alarm and says she's going to have to fine them because this is the fourth false alarm in a month. So maybe the Martins should deal with this themselves, because obviously one or both of Donna's parents can't figure out how to work it either.
Yeah.
If there were three more before this. But anyway, she leaves, and then Noah opens the armed front door and sets off the alarm again. Stuff. The next day, Donna and Noah are in the pool skinny dipping when Kelly shows up with food for the barbecue that Donna invited her to. And that's going to lose her appetite, but we will catch up with them in a future story. So happy they got to fuck? Question mark?
Yeah. And this is the one instance across several episodes in which Kelly being a rank bitch about it is perhaps warranted. Yes.
All right. I don't know if we're still doing pause for ad, but
I was about to say, I guess we really don't have to pause for ad anymore because we don't have any advertising brokers anymore. All the more reason, dear listeners, to buy a personal ad for $50 as a way of, sponsoring and stuff.
Stuff.
Not stuff, though. Stuff.
It's a good way to support the podcast, is what I'm saying.
Yes, or $100 if you have a commercial message.
Sure.
Moving on. Steve gets sued, and David has learned nothing about respecting women in our B plot. So Steve is in the office bragging to Janet about how great his seminar was when a sheriff shows up to serve him with a subpoena for small claims court because one of his students is suing him. The flame out at the club was in the timeline of the show last night, and yet somehow they've gotten it together to like have a summons served the following morning. But sure.
Mm.
And Janet's like, just give this guy the money back. But then turns out the sheriff has a whole sheaf of summonses. Take more than a day and put together a class action suit, my dudes. But whatever, it's every guy in the class. So Steve would be out $5,000. Which is when David shows up with a huge box of tapes of the seminar for which Steve owes him $1,000, and also like he's had boxes professionally made. Again, I don't know why I care about the timeline, but none of this is plausible remotely.
Also, the duplicating service is Blatherskite duplicating.
Yeah.
I feel seen. Yeah.
So David has a minute to brag about Gertrude, the broad he picked up using Steve's technique, and Steve
Gertrude. Yeah. Just name her Phyllis. It's just as appropriate for someone born in the 70s, which is to say, not.
Mm-hmm. And Steve is so happy about David having scored that he forgets all about his lawsuits, plural, and laughs grossly in triumph, of course, which you can see in the visual aids. So Steve goes to try and line up Matt to defend him, but lawyers aren't allowed in small claims court. Is that true? I didn't know that.
I never heard that.
Okay. However, Matt offers to introduce him to a friend who's a consultant on the TV show Judge Mary. We'll come back to that. Over dinner, David pretends to care about the after-school program that Gertrude runs. She moves on to denigrating the club as a seedy pickup joint. Gertrude, you can stay, absurd name or not. But when he defends it by noting that they met there, she says he was different, and he just nods his dumb face at her, which you can also see in the visual aids because he's making the Stan Laurel lantern jaw, closed lip smile that I hate.
He's also wearing, apparently he killed a fraggle and skinned it. Mm-hmm. This sweater is so wrong, and yet was ubiquitous at the time.
It was the age of chenille for sure. So then she says a lot of her kids are orphans like David, which he told her he was. So he should come and talk to them. And he makes worse faces trying to weasel out of it. But she keeps trying in clip six.
Now you have your own radio show. You're a public figure.
Yeah, but I only do it a few nights a week.
You're a role model to these kids.
Okay, first of all, LOL. Second, he was fucking arrested while doing the show, like, last week. What the fuck kind of role model is he? Like, I'm pretty sure that happened live on the air.
Yeah. Also, that's what underprivileged kids look up to. A DJ who welcomes back his junkie friends on his show and bones teenagers. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Aspirations. I mean,
like, the idea that anyone would think a radio host was cool now is absurd, but even then it was like, no, that's not a cool profession for a kid.
Yeah, I may have referred to David as Wolfman Jackoff in my notes, and that's nice. About the only good thing that I can say about any of this. Also, Gertrude, you're fired again for thinking David is role model.
Alas. So, Steve doesn't just get advice from a small claims court lawyer. He has brought his case to the good old Tetris building, which we see again in the same B-roll, to appear on Judge Mary, and is taping his episode the day after receiving all of his summonses. Again, not possible. Sure. Judge Mary is Christine Rose, the great Christine Rose, and is sort of like a patrician Judge Judy. Would you say that's accurate?
Yes, absolutely.
The class representative is a Mr. Zimmer, who was too bland to have done anything memorable in the previous episode. Like, you'd think they would have made the sad guy, like, is your grandma okay? Made him, brought him back, but no, it's some other guy. So it's like, I assume someone's cousin. But the rest of the dudes are all seated behind him, and the judge catches Steve checking his watch and calls him on it. He whines that his star witness hasn't arrived yet, and she then asks where he obtained his PhD, which he says is metaphorical and which she calls deception number one. But she also wants to know if Mr. Zimmer has ever heard of caveat emptor. And he has, but Steve offered a written guarantee for their money back if they were not satisfied. And he has it in the form of Steve's flyer. And Janet gives the first of the many great faces that she gives throughout this sequence, which you can see all of them in the visual aids, because there's a lot of very rightly shamed reactions from her. And it only gets worse when we come back and they're playing the video of Steve's iced tea story, and Steve is really not served by this forum, as we hear in clip seven.
So this is your famous technique?
Yes, and it's available for $29.95.
Stop the tape! Mr. Sanders, do not hawk your wares in my courtroom. I am not one of your pigeons.
Would you excuse me?
Young lady at the back. Hello, yes. Aren't you the woman on the tape? Yes. Name?
It's Janet Cessna.
Do you know the defendant?
Well, we work together.
Was the encounter on the tape real or scripted?
Well, it was an improv piece.
But fiction, nonetheless. I hope he pays you a lot.
Oh, he doesn't.
No.
He doesn't pay her nearly enough.
Less. No.
The show probably doesn't pay her enough either, by the way. Then David shows up. He is the aforementioned star witness and there to testify that the technique works when it's employed properly. But David now feels gross about testifying because he actually likes Gertrude. So he tries to soft pedal his testimony in clip eight.
Well, I met this girl and we started talking.
Did you or did you not use the techniques of Mr. Sanders?
Yeah, I used approach number 13. Lucky 13. The grandma approach.
I'm a grandma.
Really? No. She doesn't look it.
They make very sheepish faces at this that are a little bit funny, which you can also see in the visual aids. Sorry.
This is like Steve's fate for the rest of the series, is just dumb shit like this. It is not funny at all. They just have nothing left.
He tries. I mean, I'll give him that.
He does try.
Ian Ziering does try, but yeah, it's not good. So Steve's summation is about what a sad, lonely world this is. He doesn't have the answer to these problems, but does a whole song and dance to the effect that if it's a crime to try and make people happy, then he's guilty. And Judge Mary finds in favor of the plaintiffs since Steve was dumb enough to offer a guarantee. Da, 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 the end. Not really. Donna then needles David about his girlfriend, having heard about her from Janet. He says they're taking it slow. And it turns out everything actually went great for Steve. Clip 9.
Dude, you are the man of the hour. Judge Mary went great. It was my proudest moment.
Don't listen to him, Matt. She ripped him to shreds.
Take it you lost?
Please. There's no such thing as bad publicity, and the show pays, so I'm covered for my $5,000. Plus, I get to be on TV in less than 5 minutes.
Yeah, the episode airs the day after it's taped. Sure, why wouldn't it? So everyone gathers to watch it. They're at Donna's house at this barbecue aforementioned. The footage from Steve's video makes it into the show edit, and David is disgusted and leaves before his part airs, but that's when Gertrude comes in. Janet invited her because they're friends from when Janet used to volunteer at the community center. Apparently, David already went and gave his talk because the kids made a mobile for him, inspired by his story of only wearing secondhand tennis shoes at the orphanage. And Janet, you know, kind of eyebrows at this, but does not rat him out. But it doesn't matter because Gertrude goes into the living room just in time for David's testimony on the show. And he begs her for another chance, but unlike every other woman in the opening credits, she has integrity and leaves. And somehow, David doesn't think it will help for Steve to talk to her as he offers to do. Wah, 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 wah. On to the A-plot. Gina and Kelly have problems with Dylan, who has problems with the Marchettes and also drugs. So Dylan rides his dumb motorcycle to the Marchette manse, and when he takes his helmet off, we can see he looks even more haggard than usual. Like, the makeup artist, granted, Luke Perry has always looked old on the show, as we have discussed, but, like, they really have gone above and beyond in this episode in particular, making him look terrible.
Yeah, and the various sweat stains at various times, and the close-ups that do not help anyone, least of all the fiction that his hairline has ever been anywhere close to his eyebrows.
I mean, not as long as we've known him as a public figure, that is for sure.
New.
So he takes his gun out of the front of his jeans, very safe place to put an armed weapon when you're riding a motorcycle, by the way, and walks up to the door. And some broad opens the door, and Dylan pulls a gun on her, ordering her to be quiet, while a man upstairs yells down about his pajamas or something. And as we remember, Tony's mother is dead, so this isn't her, but Dylan still ushers her into what I guess would have had been Tony Sr.'s study and turns up the classical music on the stereo. Like, maybe he thinks Tony's father got remarried, whatever. The guy from upstairs comes in and is not Tony Sr. And these poor people have to go through their financial history with a junkie gunman explaining why they are not who he is expecting. The upshot is they bought the house from Tony's estate because he killed himself 3 weeks after Tony Jr. was killed. And Dylan is sorry. And I made a gif of him, like, sort of like waving his arms as he's like backing out of the room all embarrassed. But he still has a gun in his hand, and his hand is like not right. And it's all very ridiculous and funny.
The faces he's making is as though he just like burrito farted and was
It's like, whoops,
just
my bad.
Go.
Oh no.
Yeah. I was gonna rob you, but I'll crop dust you instead. Like, okay.
Oh well, Po Buddy's nerfed. So Kelly is freshening up when Matt comes in a bathrobe. They're at the Walsh house. I guess they just boned, as the previous episode promised they would. And she asks for a toothbrush, even though she's dressed again. Like, are you not leaving? But she's grossed out when he offers his own, as if, as he points out, she didn't just have at least his tongue in her mouth. I mean, he doesn't put it like that, but come on.
Yeah.
So Gina's then waiting on the porch at David and Dylan's place when he comes home. She wants him to stay at her place tonight, but he's all in a state and refuses. And when David comes out and notes how bad Dylan looks, Gina covers by saying he has the flu and shoves him away to take care of him at her place. Like, the flu, you wish. Kezzy wakes up in the fetal position to Gina dangling his gun on one finger and asking if he was going to kill Tony, to which Dylan thinks he was. She then confronts him about how much of a junkie he actually is. She plans to clear her schedule, not hard, to look after him, but he tries to stop her by saying he's worthless, basically, but admits that he does want to be with her. And at the courtyard at the plaza, Kelly surprises Matt with a kiss and a toothbrush to keep at his place. They have fucked two times. Like, admittedly, I've been married for 500 years, but this seems really ill-advised and weird and fast.
Well, and also, like, get a handbag big enough to fit a toothbrush and holder right. in, and just keep it in your purse.
Yeah. Get one of those little house for the bristles, you know, where they are in the drugstore. Like, buy them both at the same time. Problem solved.
Yeah. Or, I don't know, just chew some gum. Who cares?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Right. Exactly. God. So, anyway, Matt is all weirded out about it. Unfortunately, gets interrupted by a client. And then it's her turn to be weirded out when Matt introduces her to the guy as his friend. And in the store, Kelly then has to tell Donna how she overplayed her hand with the toothbrush. And Donna makes a terrible Joker face, which you can see in the visual aids, and suggests that Kelly play it cool. And so we can tell how much Gina knows about heroin withdrawal when she makes Dylan spaghetti and meatballs for dinner.
When she's never cooked before. Okay.
Right. Okay. So that's A. Like, why would that be the thing you made? I mean, admittedly, it's not like it's hard. But still, I mean, all I know about heroin withdrawal pretty much is, like, from the movie Trainspotting, which was out by this point. So it's like, enjoy seeing all that. Come back up, madam. Also, red wine. So really leaning into the whole sobriety thing. But she set the table all fancy for this. And he would rather make out. She has to tell him to eat up because she's never cooked for anyone before, as we said. There's a whole bunch of business about her making him take the first bite, but he has no appetite. And somehow she can tell from this that he is wasted right now and kicks him out to question mark. We don't know where he's supposed to go, but it doesn't matter because he immediately gets pulled over by two cops who immediately draw on him when they get out of the car because the poor people who live in the former Marchette Manse called in his plate number for the whole home invasion thing. One of the cops
were like, look for a stick insect with a receding hairline. How many of those could there be in LA?
See a motorcycle that seems like it's being driven by no one. That's your man. Anyway. One of the cops then finds drugs on him, of course. He doesn't remember anything about anything. Night in jail should refresh his memory, they think. So then Gina comes to see Dylan in jail. Clip 10.
I left a message for Matt.
It's got to be somebody else.
You know any good lawyers? I've never dated a drug addict before, so I didn't really come prepared.
I'm going to stop.
I mean, I love the Matt shade, but Gina, why are you still coming around? He's just like, I'm going to stop. Like, you're not hard, okay?
Right.
A. B. Nobody believes you.
Right.
You probably could have saved you. And also, going back to the other scene where, like, she's insisting that he take a bite and he's doing everything in his power not to, like, it's a bite. Get her off your back. Be like, this is delicious. Let's bone. Like, I mean, you could have avoided this whole contretemps, but okay.
You sure should. You could have. But yeah, we also don't know how functional he really is as a junkie because the show, as we've discussed, doesn't know how to portray heroin use. So it feels like he should just be passed out more than he is, but whatever.
That'd be nice. No.
The first thing he also says after he's going to stop is he urgently needs to get out of jail so he can require more drugs. So great. So then Kelly
and
goes
this
by
jail. Like, apparently people could just kind of like, he's not allowed to leave under any circumstances, but people can just come and go.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't know if Gina is saying like she's a spiritual advisor or something. Like, that's the reason that he gets to see his girlfriend.
Emotional support hair.
I mean, it would work.
Yeah.
So Kelly goes by Matt's office trying to make plans with him, but he puts off her suggestion of a trip to Santa Barbara claiming work. He does want to do something on Saturday, but they end up talking past each other because she's insecure and in her head and he doesn't know what her problem is. And in storms Gina, apparently only now telling Matt about Dylan's arrest. So I don't know what's up with this timeline now. But she also says why Dylan's been arrested, and even Kelly knows that Tony Sr. is dead, and they bicker about that in clip 11.
You knew that and you didn't tell Dylan?
I thought he knew.
You didn't ask him about it?
The subject was off limits. People close to him respected that, okay?
Little help here?
Antonia Marchette was Dylan's wife. She was killed 3 years ago. Her father was responsible.
He also moved her grave. Did you know that?
All right, well, I should go to the station. But, is there anything else I should know?
What is it?
Well, you know what? It doesn't really have anything to do with you, so maybe if you could leave us alone for a second, that would be great.
Fine.
My God, Gina's open hostility towards Kelly is the best, because she doesn't
really,
like, Val would always like back down or be hurt by it, and Gina has Kelly's number and doesn't give a shit, and it's fantastic.
Yep. Also, again with the timeline queries, so Tony Sr. buried Tony Jr., then moved her grave after Dylan had like left town, then killed himself.
Yeah,
they said
what?
It was 3 weeks later. The busy schedule.
Since, I mean, and also since when, like, TV never does this correctly, which I get it. It's like not convenient. Mm-hmm. So, but headstones take a year.
Yeah, they do. Better Call Saul did it correctly, but yeah, no one else does.
Yeah. So yeah, that's fascinating to me that he's just sort of like, he's got his little post-it that he's like, move, you know, inter Antonia, disinter Antonia. Leave headstone, kill self.
You just 3D print them at home now, but back in the day.
Yeah, it's true.
It's true. So when Kelly has gone, Gina tells Matt about the gun and the heroin, and there is some sad piano. And then Matt goes to confer with Dylan in jail. He could face a couple of years on the heroin possession and 5 to 10 years for the home invasion. Like, again, I guess I have no concept of, like, sentencing, but that seems high to me.
I mean, he did fart in there.
Okay, true.
Like, maybe it could have been 2.5 to 5, but aggravated gas salt.
True. So Dylan just wants Matt to make it go away. Matt asks if the gun was loaded, and Dylan pivots to ask what happens if he pleads guilty. Matt says there will be no bail, and Dylan sniffles and suffers, and when Matt asks how withdrawal is going, Dylan changes the subject back again and says he will plead not guilty. And instead of asking more questions that would help him to make such a case, Matt says the arraignment is tomorrow. Dylan can't spend another night in jail. And Matt's like, too bad. Also, if I do get you bail, you're going to rehab. Dylan dodges again, asking to see Gina. Matt has pulled strings to get her in, and then they hug. She thinks it's because he wee-wee-wee-wee loves her, but no. Clip 12.
There's a can of tennis balls in a laundry bag in the bottom.
In my closet.
I don't know, understand what you're talking about.
Inside is a little balloon, and I need you.
I'm not doing that for you.
She just gotta help me through this, and I promise you, no more.
You're such a liar.
I'm not gonna make it in here.
Promise?
Nah.
I can't.
Sorry, I left in so much of the drug music, but it made me laugh.
I mean, I love that the bongos are like, yeah, we see her point. And then the synthesizer's like, but he'll die.
But also, like, these two have been going out for maximum 2 weeks. Like, to ask her to put a baggie into one of her cavities is really asking a lot of a new relationship.
Here's where I'm stuck. Tennis balls? Were those left over from the Matt Perry storyline? That's asinine. Like, you know what I brought back from Europe? Tennis balls.
Yeah. What? That's true. We've never seen him play tennis.
Thank
ever.
God.
Anyway, back at the beach apartment, it's Kelly's turn to regale us with another story about the gang's high school days. Oh, this'll take us back. Clip 13.
So it was senior year in high school, and we were supposed to be dissecting starfish. Mm-hmm. And the night before, Dylan broke in and freed them all. He took them back to the tide pools.
So you're telling me when he holds a couple at gunpoint, his heart's in the right place?
He left town the day after his wife was buried.
He's had zero closure. When can I talk to him?
I'm working as quickly as I can. Just let me do that, okay?
All right. I know. I'm just worried. I don't know what's going on.
Well, he's going to be out on bail tomorrow.
Okay, that's the legal update. Now what's really going on, though?
I don't know, Kelly. He's your friend.
I'll say it one more time. There's nothing going on between me and Dylan.
I know.
Then why, every time I bring him up, you get all weird?
No, I don't.
All right, if it's not about Dylan, then it's about us.
Oh, you think? Psych major? Also, she's so pissy about him saying that he's her friend, which, like, you don't act like his friend, so even that designation is a little much, because you're just being a complete tattered rag all the time. But maybe he doesn't want his clients to know his business.
Perhaps.
Or also, maybe he doesn't want them to think that he's boning cat butt mouth. I don't know. Could be the second thing. Would be in my case.
Mm-hmm. Also, to back up to the starfish story, I'm not going to say that never happened, because it's not like the story that Brandon told about his first day of school when he fell, because that we know didn't happen, because it was like it was surrounded by events that we saw occur. But at least the starfish story did not happen on camera. And any time that like Dylan did anything that was at all with a social justice orientation, Brenda was involved. So I'm going to guess that's why they couldn't actually pull an example from what we saw on the show.
Yeah. And like his entire senior year was spent sulking in the direction of academic authority and working shadow caster. So that's horseshit. But I mean, the current writers don't seem to have any grounded idea of things that happened, like references that were already made. Like, there is no Bible for the timeline. And we'll see that in the next episode when Kelly's talking about their friendship, that it's like, even Dylan would revise this in footage that we've seen a gazillion times. So whatever. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Kelly confronts Matt about refusing to go to Santa Barbara with her. And I was thinking he was going to say she was ridiculous because she doesn't understand what it means to have a job you actually have to show up for. But it's because that he's embarrassed to be broke. And she ignores that, saying she doesn't know where their relationship is and forcing him to say they're more than friends because of what he told his client. So he goes on the deck to yell from the railing that Kelly is his girlfriend and great, and they make out, and who cares? They're so bad together. She's so unlikable.
She is. This is absolutely the worst she's been, and I don't say that lightly, and it does not improve.
No, and he's like kind of likable. Like, he's sort of cute and, like, in, you know, I don't hate him. I just hate him with her.
Yeah. Well, and it makes me think quite a bit less of him that he hangs in there with her. Like, every single face, and you'll see this in the visual aids, like, every freeze frame, whether I'm trying to hit it or not, is her making a stink face at him for having the temerity to be like, you're not over this junky jackass.
Right.
And she's not. So anyway, we'll get into it.
Oh, yes. So Dylan calls Gina to say his arraignment is at 2 the next day. Also, he needs her to bring him drugs. Great conversation to have on a payphone in jail that is certainly monitored. Anyway, he promises he'll go to rehab as soon as he gets out. She refuses to smuggle drugs in. He tries to guilt her by saying he'll die if she doesn't. The guard tells him to wrap it up, but Dylan's got one more guilt to guilt. Clip 14.
I only get one phone call. Don't make me think this was wasted.
Classic. Classic junkie. Oh, yeah, Gina, do not fall for this.
Yeah, but the bongos did not chime in this time, so apparently we're supposed to find this convincing.
Yeah, she has a lot to think about. So Matt does get Dylan out on bail off screen because the writers gave up trying to figure out how. And Dylan is squirrely as hell in clip 15.
Where's Gina?
You're welcome.
Hey, they just read the charges today. If you get them dropped, I'll thank you. Have you seen any sign of her?
Look, Dylan, this rehab center, they can't take you until after 6 p.m. So.
Are you hearing me? Because I'm looking for Gina.
I don't know. The fact that she's not out here with open arms singing yippity-doo-dah is beyond me.
Okay, why don't you just give me a ride home then?
Thought we'd go to a party.
You're cute, but I'm not in the mood.
Come on, your friends are gonna be there.
Gina?
You can tell them what you've been doing.
What, humiliation? Nice tack?
No, I think it'll be good for you. You can use their support.
I can use their support. You know, I could do anything. Do you really think that if I want to get high, that you or anybody who is there could stop me?
You know how many possession cases I've handled? Jail time, no jail time. Addicts go south, and that's what you are, Dylan, an addict. You might think you're different because you got a few bucks in your pocket. Well, you're wrong. You are weak, and you will end up in jail again.
Thanks, I'm scared straight now.
Yeah, well, maybe get lucky. Maybe you get one bad batch and you're dead.
Maybe we'll get lucky. Oh, wait. No.
Exactly.
We don't.
No. Yeah, that was just a very melodramatic conversation. Matt is ready to take Dylan to rehab immediately or else get him another lawyer. But straight to rehab apparently means straight to Donna's barbecue, specifically through it to a bathroom. Oh, sorry. I thought you were going to say
no, I had something straight to it and through it without having changed or showered to get the jail stink off or any of that. Like, I know he's in dire off sick straits, but dude, like a new sweatshirt, please.
Yeah. So Gina arrives after Dylan, but there's one more roadblock between them. Clip 16.
Oh, goody. You're here. He's in the pool house.
Thanks.
You want to fill me in?
No.
Gina.
So she finds him coming out of the bathroom, sweaty as hell, looking awful. For some reason, she wants to touch and hug him anyway, despite the fact, as we've just said, he is filthy and gross. And he asks her to gather everyone while he catches his breath because he wants to tell them something. But she already went to his place and brought his stash. And she's blissful that he's hugging her, but he's just patting down her many cargo pants pockets to find the drugs. And she is betrayed and tells him she hates him and takes off. And her taking off takes her past Donna. Gina says she's leaving, that she should ask Dylan why. And Donna does. And Dylan makes a wild turn and knocks her into the pool, where she strikes her head on the brick wall of the hot tub. And it is very funny. You can see it in the visual aids.
And then the heroin hits Dylan.
Yeah. Yeah, she just floats there for a while, and he, like, nods down on a lounge chair, but fortunately David and Steve come out before Donna's been in the water very long, although how would we tell if she had brain damage, but they pull her out.
Also, built-in flotation devices. Sorry.
True also.
I'm sorry.
Supposedly no one knows CPR. Kelly runs over to Dylan to ask what happens, but he's too out of it to say, and as the episode ends, Donna's still not breathing. Oh, no!
Oh, no!
Oh, no!
I'm not your monkey.
Okay, let's close it out with our episode MVP. The cops that arrested Dylan?
I guess. I mean, I would say Gina, but
yeah,
she's
but
into
no.
Dylan. Yeah, but
not,
no.
Not
so
an
I guess,
Abelina. Not
I guess
this week.
Gertrude.
That's true. Gertrude. She sticks up for herself. Yeah. She unfortunately exposes her kids to David, but they'll probably be okay.
True.
Least valuable player.
Oh,
Dylan. So gross.
Yeah.
You can see that it really looks like he stinks. Like, for all the other faults of this whole storyline, effectively making him look disgusting is not among them. They've nailed that, at least.
Yeah, true.
All right, we have a user submitted challenge.
I scored some amazing stones.
This comes from our friend and long ago past guest at Couch Baron on Twitter, aka John Ramos. 5 words from the episode Noah would be most likely to mispronounce. Let's go all the way back to let's scroll through. Carpoot at Donna's house. Amish country, he would probably say Amish.
Technique. Stothoscap.
Litigation. I think that makes 5. We really could go on and on,
so.
But that's
we
plenty.
Really could.
And the Kim challenge.
Bad, and dangerous to me.
5 ways from this episode, Dylan proves he is mad, bad, and dangerous to know. Well, he smells bad. That's one.
you know, home invasion, bad and dangerous.
Dangerous to drive while very high.
Dangerous to get your girlfriend to smuggle drugs to you, and also bad. And also farts. And I think that's fine.
And dangerous with his wild arm movements to any Donnas in the vicinity who he might accidentally fatally drown.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's...
Oh, God. There it is. There it is.
It's like, that's just such a non-event that I didn't even consider it dangerous, because it's like, she's up and cleaverning again in the next episode. Spoiler.
Yeah.
Now it is time for a Luke Perry teen heartthrob excerpt. You just have to erase his, like, bum stenchy looking Luke from this episode and return with us to the halcyon days of the early 90s. Now we will be treated to the 90210 audition. In the early spring of 1990, Fox TV began an open casting call for Class of Beverly Hills. Anyone who wanted a part on the new show could audition. As opposed to people who wanted a part on The Price is Right. What the fuck are you talking about, book? The studio saw thousands of young people, and also Andrea. They were all eager to portray high school teenagers. This is so bad. Luke's agent called Luke at his construction job and told him he had an audition with the show's casting board. Luke had to tell his boss huge lies to get out of work that day. In Los Angeles? Okay.
Yeah.
When his boss finally said he could go, Luke had another obstacle. He needed something to wear. That day, he hadn't worn a shirt to work. Okay.
What?
He grabbed an old shirt out of a friend's car trunk. The shirt had oil spots and lacked buttons. Luke tied it on and headed for the audition. I think this was in the movie.
Wasn't maybe? It? Maybe? I don't recall a buttonless shirt tied, but okay, maybe.
Under his belly button so that he could scratch it more easily.
Exactly. Thank you.
Once at the studio, he waited for his turn in a little room with James Eckhouse, who was auditioning for the part of Mr. Walsh. One would hope so. Both actors were nervous, but tried to keep themselves under control. Luke, however, couldn't overcome his nervousness. He ran to the bathroom and threw up.
Oh.
At first, Luke auditioned for the part of Steve Sanders, which eventually went to his friend Ian Ziering. The producers thought Luke might be the right actor to play Dylan McKay. When Luke walked into the audition, it was like, wow, that's the person, said the show's creator, Darren Star. Luke knew he wanted the part when he picked up the audition script. Luke kept repeating to himself, oh man, they gotta take me. They got to. Really? Dylan was the last role created for the show. The writers originally wrote him in for only one episode. In fact, the character didn't even appear in the pilot, parenthesis, first episode. Thanks, book. After the pilot, we felt there should be someone who was a little dangerous, a little on the edge, said producer Aaron Spelling, and we came up with the Dylan character. LOL. The producer made other changes to the show. He decided to use the area's zip code in the title, so he changed the series name from Class of Beverly Hills to Beverly Hills 90210. Say what? After the third casting call, the producers told Luke he had the part. Getting the job meant many changes in Luke's life. He knew that his move to California was permanent, and that meant leaving Yasmin Bleeth. According to Luke, the two decided to end their relationship. Luke's character appeared in the first show of 1991, which was titled Isn't It Romantic? Luke played the character so well, the writers added him to the main cast. In the first show of 1991?
Yeah, also his first episode as aired was The Green Room.
Yeah, which was like episode 2.
Yeah.
Or 3, depending on how you count the pilot.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, that is it for today. Next time on Again With This, Steve gets marooned in yet another unfunny G-plot, this one about dog park politics, and speaking of bitches, Kelly is the biggest one she's been to date when Gina and Matt both question her hogging all the Dylan drums. Oh, and there's some sort of red carpet stuff with one of Donna's dresses. You'll be happy just to nominate yourself for some Baylox when you peep our visual aids for this and every other episode of Again With This. You can find those visual aids on our website at previously.tv. And you can follow that website on Twitter at previouslytv. You can follow this very podcast at AWT90210. I'm Jail Stink Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is dutiful daughter Tara Ariano, and she is on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is guinea pig guy, D. David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoonie.
Oh, no.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.